When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
Ow. Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White. A whiter smile without the rinse.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern MMCast podcast and YouTube show. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? This is Masters of Modern week. It's a big week for us. This is exciting stuff. We get to talk about one of the most insane sets ever, Alex. I mean, am I wrong in saying that this looks like one of the most insane sets ever printed?
No, you're absolutely correct.
Like it's bananas. Yeah. Every day I'm like, oh, that's the best card in any standard set, right? Like that's like how I feel when I look
at this. Something that's really interesting is like after Modern Horizons 1 or during Modern Horizons 1, there was this big attitude of oh, it's Commander Masters. None of the cards here are going to make decks better, or like none of these fit into already established archetypes, which is like a lot of how like Magic card evaluation happens. It's like my least favorite version of Magic card evaluation, where it's like, I'm only going to look for cards that make already established decks better. So I only want those, and I'm not going to think like, oh, this makes this other card better. And like, obviously proven wrong, ended up being one of the most powerful sets of all time. Hogak broke the format in half, as did Astrolab, as did Renin 6 and other powerful cards, Force Negation, etc. But I think this time around people are like, oh yeah, last time, but now there's been this like retroactive continuity where everyone looking at Modern Horizons would be like, oh wait, last time that was overpowered. This set feels way more balanced. And and like, hindsight is always 20/20. I do think two things are different, right? Like last time, this set was developed knowing what happened with Modern Horizons 1. That set did what it did as this set was being developed and finalized. They were like, okay, let's see and make sure, let's test. They brought in more pros that of to make sure that this set just like didn't break Modern in half as much as the last one did. And they paid more attention to it. They also developed this set specifically to be Modern Horizons 2, where Modern Horizons 1 was designed and templated as Time Spiral 1, and then halfway through development, they realized that this could be a set that feeds new cards into Modern for the first time. So, and like to give it that much more of a little bit of a bump. And so like a lot of cards were already designed and archetypes were already at play versus this specifically being designed to be this. So that as another layer where people, they were thinking of Modern at the time when developing these cards. But remember Modern Horizons 1, everyone walked out of preview season being like, oh, this set's not made for Modern. Doesn't seem like anything is going to be here. And then it broke the format in half. And there are cards that we won't even talk about tonight that we might miss that are just going to be so overpowered that they might break the format. And I think that's fine. I think like to get cool cards like this and they raise this power level, you need that. But like, and my guess is it comes from a total, like, I don't think there are any cards in this set. And in fact, when we talk about what we're talking about today during our main review, which we're doing this from a deck perspective and talking about which decks got new cards, the smallest section is like current decks that are already powerful that got new tools, which there's definitely tools there, but it's A, less interesting, and B, like, those are the ones Wizards tested for. Wizards isn't like, yes, let us print cards to make Heliod Company better. They're like,
well, I think something really interesting to point out when you look at this set is that, number one, we just got Time Spiral Remastered. And in a lot of ways, when you play Time Spiral Remastered, what you feel is like, you kind of want it to feel like a modern Masters set. Like, that's what it wants to feel like, right? Like, it is kind of that. And it harkens back to this time period with all these fun mechanics and cool cards, which, what you realize when you go back now 10 years or more, is that most of the old sets are not that powerful. Like, by and large, the old sets, even the ones that had really good cards in them, the whole of the set is really underpowered, actually. Like, if you look at the Time Spiral block on the whole, it's not that powerful of a set. It's just kind of powerful, right? It has a few cards that are really cool, and everything else is super moderate because it was just designed for standard. This set coming directly after Time Spiral Remastered is so interesting because it feels like this is all of the powerful stuff that while they were designing and thinking about Remastered, they were like, well, if we just like added a lot of really cool stuff to this, what would it look like? And that's exactly what this set is. It actually feels like the restrictors were taken off. And they got to take all the inspiration from those reprints and craft this whole new thing. And so when I look at this set, to me, this feels way more deliberate than Modern Horizons 1. This everything I read in the set feels like it's supposed to be pushed to exactly the limit of the power level they wanted so that it would remain exciting without being stupid. Like that, and I'm sure there will be one or two stupid cards in here. It's impossible to avoid. One or two of these will break the format and probably get banned because this set is so powerful, it's hard to imagine it wouldn't happen. But everything else is going to be right at that edge, which is the most exciting kind of magic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like a few interesting things, right? Like, one, when you mentioned power level on this set, it does feel pushed. I also think part of that, where it feels the most pushed, interesting here, are on known quantities. Right. It's like just Counterspell is being added, or the new Noble Hierarch, which is just a, like, we know what that card does. Wizards know exactly what the power level of the card. It's extraordinarily high. It's the most played creature of all time in Modern, but it's like, fine. Like, it's not breaking the format in half. Or it's like Answers, right? It's like Damn or the Invocations, where they're all like really technically more responsive cards, which the format kind of needs anyways. So it's interesting to see, like, here power level come out a little bit more on the response side or known quantity side versus pushing power level on engines, right? Like, that was the one thing that Modern Horizons 1 did more, was like, here are a bunch of engine cards, let's go. And here it seems a little bit more on known engines from Legacy that exist already but like have never really made it there, like Enchantress or kind of just like more on the answer side. So that's one thing that I think is interesting. Two, like, it was, I'm so glad, especially before we did this episode, that 3 weeks ago we did a draft where we drafted Modern Horizons 1 and Time Spiral in the same evening. And we did like a,
yeah,
almost a mini Highlander Gauntlet roulette situation where like you built two commander decks, or not commander decks, you built two limited decks out of two drafts, one of Time Spiral Masters, one of Modern Horizons. And then you played against them randomly. And like, it really shows you the difference between between the two power levels, right? Like, where, like, literally, because you battled them. Like, that you, like, there were times where I played my Time Spiral Remastered deck against, you know, someone else's Modern Horizons deck, and you, like, get a feel for, like, oh, pound for pound, which one of these sets is more powerful, which one is more worse. And Modern Horizons 2 seems to be more powerful than Modern Horizons 1. So I agree that kind of was taken into account. There's also, and I think one of the reasons they're willing to go hot ham on the power level here that's a little weird is this set was developed and made with the intent that Pioneer was going to be a functioning and fully supported and fully adopted Magic format. And right. So some of this feels like, let's just take the best stuff of Legacy, if not the best stuff, at least the like, let's broaden Modern to be Legacy-esque where we can. And because we have Pioneer to be our like safety gap middle ground that people can be that is going to be a safer place for people to play. Let Modern get more and more closer to Legacy as we move forward, where we're like, let's print in tombs and straight up animate deads and like all of these effects that like don't fly in any other format. And it's fascinating. I like and then obviously Pioneer didn't work. This set was already going to come out, and that doesn't say Pioneer could come back. Right. I'm not like or going back to paper Magic, I would be very surprised if Wizards didn't retry and invigorate Pioneer. I would imagine actually that if GPs ever come out or if paper Pro Tours ever come out back, like there's going to be a few of them, and the first run is possibly just going to be a Pioneer focused one because they're going to want to jumpstart that, like a hard jumpstart on Pioneer. But this set was intended to kind of be a further breakaway point to make Modern more and more modern day Legacy, where Legacy was when Modern started, than where it was currently sitting.
I think we talked about that for a long, long time, right? Which is like a Modern slowly but surely over time was becoming more and more and more of the no pun intended, the Modern Legacy. It was becoming like sort of what we expected out of Legacy. And the other big point that really stands out to me here, and we're going to talk about the incarnations, but we always would say Force of Will is kind of the card in a lot of ways that holds Legacy together. It's the thing that, you know, allows the blue decks to police the rest of the format to not just be completely unfair. And so Force of Negation highlighted a cycle of cards in Modern Horizons 1 that kind of was trying to give us a little bit of that reactive stuff you're talking about. But in the end, only one of those cards became a staple. The other one became, the green one became, you know, played a totally significant sideboard card, and the other three were basically irrelevant. These cards look to me, when I look at all of them, like every one of them has a place. They all feel like they are trying to give us more tools like that to be able to make Modern a format where, I mean, we're going to talk about specific decks, but if I'm in blue-white and I get to a turn where I want to cast my 5-mana Teferi, you know, my one or two of in my deck, and I want to cast that, and I have open the white invocation in my hand, like, I'm going to have that feeling of, I can do this, because I won't lose to a creature combo deck, because I at least have a piece of interaction while I'm tapped out. And this includes the 2-mana I'm going to untap to hold open this counterspell. I've got double backup, right? Like, that's like what is going to happen in those situations. And I think that this set, these cards, and a lot of the power level that has been pushed, like I read through the full spoiler before this episode that so far, just to make sure I was completely up to date and I hadn't missed even a single common. And I felt like 85% of what I read to me felt playable in the sense of what we used to talk about on this show, where if I read a card, I'd be like, oh, I want to try to build around that. Like 85% of what I saw so far was like, that fits into something cool I could do something fun with.
Yeah. And that kind of gets us to the reason how we're doing this review. So this is our Modern Horizons set review. Now, we're going to be talking about Modern Horizons basically for the rest of the season, based on how Ben mentioned. Our normal set review, where we go over every card we want to think about or talk about, literally would have taken, we would have been talking about Modern Horizons in 2023. There's just literally almost every single card has a reference I want to talk about, has a power, like is playable in Modern, playable in Commander, like literally this is one of the deepest sets I've ever seen. Even stuff like there's a Squadron Hawk, not Squadron Hawk, whatever, there's a white lifelink flying 3/3 for
the bird that
exists because it's the, when they were making this set, one of the most pop in Modern Horizons one of the most popular creatures, I think it was like the top of the popularity world, was Llanowar Squad or whatever. It was like the group of Llanowar elves, the three of them,
right?
That card is at the time on Arena the most crafted card was the 1/1 flying lifelink. And so they were like, okay, let's just make that the Llanowar one, and they made a few of those, but that was the one that survived. And like, that's right there. That was the conversation we would have had. So like, that every single card has that. And if you follow me on TikTok, I'm going to talk about a lot of them there, but we wanted to figure out ways to do this. So we're doing this in kind of two parts. The first one is today. We're going to talk about a bunch of different decks that we're going to go over. We're going to talk about decks that have fallen behind that are maybe getting a big boost here. Stuff like Affinity. We're going to talk about decks that never existed that are just getting a bunch of pieces that let them exist. And then we'll talk about some established decks that are getting some big bumps here. And then next week, we're going to do what I'm referring to as the Modern Horizons 2 Academy Awards. And we have somewhere around 15 to 20 categories, everything from best mythic to most flavorful to best red card to best card in Modern, best commander, etc., that we are going to be taking nominations. There's in fact a form below in the description that you can fill your nominations for each category for. And that closes on Friday. But please comment below any ideas you have as well, if you want to start convincing others to include your ideas for each category. So you get one nomination per category, and then we'll take that into consideration. We'll do a bunch of polling and voting in different formats, from Twitter to TikTok to wherever we decide to post it, on each of the categories. And then we'll do a whole Academy Awards. We'll do, you know, we'll have the four main nominees, and then we'll read off the envelope and we'll announce the best one. And we'll talk about it a little bit.
Five nominees. That's how it works. Just
no, you want to do, you want to do four because of Twitter.
We're going to change the Academy Awards format to accommodate Twitter, Alex. Really?
Yeah. The Academy Awards changed their format to accommodate
that's fair.
You get on like the Dark Knight or something. How many Academy Awards can win now? 10? Also, yeah, like sometimes so like best animated feature has like two nominees.
It's fair.
And also, great news, the MMCast/Master of Modern is now affiliated with TCG Player. So if you are checking out cards, if you're buying stuff there, or you have here one of the cool decks ideas that we talk about today and you want to buy cards from it, make sure to go to tcgplayer.com and use the check code VMMCast, capital MM, capital T, as you check out. So that, and it doesn't cost you anything else. We just get a little bit of a bump from that. And it helps us out, helps this podcast continue as it's doing. So it costs you nothing, just as your normal card buying experiences, and then we get a little bit of a benefit and super appreciate it. So thank you, TCG Player. Thank you for anyone who uses that code while shopping. We super appreciate it. And lastly, oh, I do want to one change. So our Academy Awards episode, the nomination process has been up, and there'll be voting going on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. So make sure to check that out, because it has been live and I've been sharing it everywhere on the internet. So hopefully your nomination got in time at the time of you listening to this. And last but not least, our Discord is open to the public. If you want to join the Discord, we've opened it up. It used to be Patreon exclusive. Now it's available for everyone. Our patrons get a special area in there where they get to hang out and do stuff there as well. But there's a bunch of sections, including talking about preview cards and other cool stuff. Definitely make sure to check that out. All of this is linked below. And we're just hanging out and talking about stuff. So let's get to the episode, Ben. So first, we're talking about decks that have fallen behind but have gotten a huge boost. And the first deck we're going to talk about is Affinity. So Affinity was already falling behind. So, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, like, oh, this deck has been dead since Mox Opal was banned. And I haven't, like, that's what killed the deck, right? Like, is Mox Opal's banning. But to me, Mox Opal's banning was like a nail in the coffin to a deck that already was kind of falling behind in the metagame. Now, Urza decks and KCI decks were taking advantage of it in extreme ways. But at that point, it had already fallen behind. This set has
pumped. I think if you're going to go back to Affinity, like its heyday, because everything you're talking about, KCI, Urza, those are different decks that take advantage of artifact synergy. But Affinity, I think when we say that, and I think the other way to refer to that deck is robots, is like it's a small attacking creatures deck that use pieces of equipment and kind of fast, efficient mana to overwhelm you in the early game. And I know there were versions of it that played the red card that I'm forgetting right now, the one that you could play spells per turn off the top of your deck. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is that deck was definitely a thing up until, man, it's been a few years now, right? Like even, but like you said, even before the Opal banning, that deck had definitely suffered. And I think when we talk about some of the cards that had been or that have been previewed, it does seem like there was interest by Wizards in giving this just a little bit of a kick in the butt, right? Like, it's a very iconic deck in Modern's history. I would go as far as to say that in the old days of Modern, like the first half of the format, it was a top three deck for the first half of the format.
Yeah, and I think like Zabaz or Zabaz or Zabzabs, whatever you want to call him, the Glimmer Wasp is like a big win for the deck, right? It's like one for one mana, you get a flat, like a modular one. Doubles all modular triggers, so it makes Ravager counters double, and then you can use it to destroy artifacts you control, so it kind of has like a sacrifice effect, but instead of sacrificing, you destroy it. It's like a cool, cute way of working around it, and then can gain flying for one white. It's this cool kind of Boros legendary creature for that. I think that's a kind of a really cool addition to the deck. It gives another kind of Ravager-esque card. You also get stuff like Ornithopter of Paradise, which just gives you a Flying Birds of Paradise for two mana, which might be a little expensive, but having flying is like really a big game. So I think, and then you just have stuff like, what's it called? There's like a bunch of actual Affinity cards that feel like they were printed for it. You have,
I mean, there's Thought Monitor is the card that really comes to mind for me. I mean, that was the card that when I read it, I was like, wait, you're telling me that if I hit Affinity if I have all my things in play and this is the minimum, because let's be honest, every single person that ever reads an affinity card does the same thing, right? You go, okay, if the conditions are correct, I will be playing this card for only its colored mana. So what you're looking at is a 2-mana 2/2 flyer that draws you two cards. That's an insanely powerful card.
Right.
That's like, if that is a thing, and granted, the affinity cost is huge, right? Isn't it like 6 colorless or something like that? It's like 8
it's
mana.
Six and 1. But it is only, so it's one more than Thoughtcast. 6 blue.
Okay, 6 blue. So you can cast this for 1 blue if you have 6 artifacts in play. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, but I still look at the card and I go, if the conditions are met properly, which, you know, there's plenty of ways to meet them, that's an insane card. A 2/2 flyer for, that's also an artifact that draws you two cards. I mean, that blows my mind.
Yeah, you know, as I said, Thoughtcast has seen play in Affinity since the inception of the format. But for this, it's 2 extra Affinity. Now there are more artifact lands. There are better one drops. I actually think this card's really, really strong. And like this alongside Zabaz. And then, as I just mentioned, the new artifact lands, including the modular one, as well as a bunch of gold ones. Now, they all enter the battlefield tapped, which is a negative for Affinity. But it's also a deck that like, turn 0 maybe plays one of the tap lands, maybe plays like 1 or 2 of them for the colors they need fixing of, and then turn 2 can dump their whole hand or put an Ornithopter in play on turn 1 and a Memnite on turn 1, and then turn 2 you can do this big explosive turn that pumps that Ornithopter, letting you get in for damage. I think there's like a lot of really powerful things that make it, and then because of stuff like Zabaz, there's now a reason to play Rustveil Bridge, which is the red-white artifact land. So it's like, there's a lot of really cool stuff added to Affinity, I think, for sure.
There's also a few things that they added to Affinity that are like particularly clever, right? Like there's the new 1-mana Esper Sentinel, which is 1 white artifact creature human soldier for a 1/1. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell each turn, draw a card unless that player pays X, whereas X is Esper Sentinel's power. Now that's also a human, which is a whole different conversation, but I do think that this card, given, you know, plating and other things that could be happening, modular, like this card's very good. This could be a really sneaky card that it ends up in Affinity. I really like this card a lot. And then the other small card in Affinity that I think doesn't quite chart on the actual power level, but it's just like one of those cards that I think I thought about probably for Highlander, is Barbed Spike, which is 1/1 for an equipment that when it comes into play, it makes a 1/1 flying creature. And then it also attaches because it's living weapon, +1/+0. Well, no, it's not living weapon, but it just becomes a 2/1 flyer for 2.
It's got living weapon vibes.
Yes, exactly. I mean, look, it's a 2-mana 2/1 flyer that's an artifact that creates you 2 artifacts. And if it dies, you are left with something that is able to make your artifact bigger. I don't think that card will ever see play in actual Modern Affinity. But when I look at and I think about things that give you higher power and make multiple artifacts for 2 or less, it checks all the boxes. So just like to think about that I think is cool.
I think if this card was a servo, it made a servo and then it gave whatever it was equipped to flying, this card would be playable in Modern Affinity. I think it just misses it without it giving the flying. The fact that it makes a flying creature is worse. All right. The next deck we're going to talk about is Merfolk. Famously, it and Affinity, ironically, have, I believe, both. I think Affinity has won the most Grand Prix, and then Merfolk is tied with Elves and Jund for winning the next most. But Merfolk has gotten a lot of power. Obviously, Wizards came into this being like, let's make Merfolk good. I think they want Merfolk to be good. Interesting that they went with the mana denial strategy. I do like that there's a few like shot calls. I am excited to do like a review of both our Modern Horizons 1 videos and then also our Modern Horizons 2 predictions, because we definitely said Rishadin Port is a card they can print in the Modern, and we didn't get actual Rishadin Port, but we did get Rishadin Dockhand. And on top of that, we also got Tide Shaper. So we now have 2 additional pieces of the Merfolk on the mana denial strategy, right? Like Merfolk already was playing Spreading Seas, using that to like turn off people's non-blue mana and give their creatures, basically make them unblockable because their opponent now has most of their creatures have island walk. That's how Merfolk works. Now you have the addition of Rishadin Dockhand, which now can tap a secondary land. And then you have Tide Shaper, which alongside those 2 cards turns an additional land into an island, making it just like this really efficient 1-mana, the 2-mana based mana denial strategy that then allows you to get to the point where you have like six lore, unblockable six sixes in play, just because that's how the deck works. And then you add that the new Sea God. Let me bring up exactly what this does.
I have it right here in front of me. I think what you're talking about is really interesting. The new Sea God is a three mana. It's blue, blue one. It is a 3/4 legendary creature. It's called a Svelin of Sea and Sky. Blue, blue one, 3/4 legendary creature, merfolk god. Svelin of Sea and Sky has indestructible as long as you control two other merfolk. Whenever Svelin attacks, draw a card. Other merfolk you control have ward one, which states whenever another merfolk you control becomes target of spell or ability, an opponent controls, counter it unless they pay one. So it's got that. It's got those vibes, those Unsettled Mariner vibes. And I think what's crazy about this card is if you compare this to Kopala, you know, from whatever the Ixalan set was, right? The 2/2 for three counter spells when you're like, this is they're like, yeah, we'll get rid of some of those, the two counter, and we'll move it down to one. We'll call it ward. But when it attacks, you draw a card. It's indestructible if it's in a merfolk deck. And also, it's a 3/4 to begin with instead of a 2/2 for three. Like, this is the older brother that just beefs all over Kopala. Like, I don't even know if a merfolk deck can make use of this because most of what they need to be doing costs two. But this is so pushed. This is so good in that deck.
Well, merfolk has always had space for the three mana protection creature, right? Like, it played what's the spirit that it used to play that made all it would counter spells?
It used to play Kira, yeah, in the old
Kira days. Glass Spinner, and then it played, I think it was Kapala, but so it always has played that three drop, and this one just seems better than most of the other ones because it protects itself, it's indestructible, it makes it so all other merfolk have ward, which basically makes them all have a Thalia attack to try and remove them, which it makes it that much harder to interact, and it starts drawing you cards. I definitely think this card is super playable in merfolk, added to the fact that people's manas are already going to be... Now, that is one thing that makes this card a little bit worse, is like, of the mana denial cards we mentioned, two of them don't get rid of mana. They make that mana blue. In some ways that works because it's ward, but it is ward one, so they can always use that blue. It does give them something to use that blue mana for, which makes it a little bit worse. But that being said, I still think it's a pretty powerful effect. And like, alongside the fact that you can be doing that denial, the other like cards that aren't necessarily merfolk are interaction. You get cards like Suspend, which is one blue, exile target creature and put two time counters on it. It doesn't have Suspend, it gains Suspend. So you they printed blue Path to Exile.
The irony of this card is that this is actually what I always use to try to talk about Pongify or Rapid Hybridization as, which is an instant speed blue one mana spell that could get rid of a creature that you needed to be gone. And obviously those spells always ran into the problem of they got a 3/3 creature, but that was always the theory, right? It was like, this was instant speed removal, non-conditional for one blue. And this is so much better. I mean, I've always been such a fan of the card Suspend, and this just is that, right? Like, or no.
The ability Suspend.
Delay. The card delay, right? Blue one, counter target spell with three Suspend counters on it. This is just Path to Exile with that ability. The other one you didn't mention is Subtlety, which is the other mono blue Insano card that makes merfolk just like, if this is in your hand, every card... I don't know if it's as good as Suspend, but I definitely think that having the ability to tap out for Lords to go for the alpha and then have Subtlety in your hand to bounce a blocker is quite good.
My issue with Subtlety is that It only targets spells, so you can't just bounce a thing in play.
It's one target creature spell. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Got it. You can't bounce a creature.
Yeah, you can't bounce a creature in play, and B, it only hits creatures and planeswalkers, so it doesn't get rid of like removal spells, which is normally what merfolk doesn't like. I actually think this card's really overrated. I like love the other invocations, but I think Subtlety is definitely the worst one outside of very specific strategies. We can get to that later. But I do think that there are a ton of powerful cards for Merfolk, and I do really like the like mana denial version of the strategy, and then giving stuff like Suspend, where Suspend allows you to get rid of that blocker that you want to get rid of for very, very low cost, and Merfolk is aggressive enough to be able to capitalize on it. Like, that's the Suspend is a card that needs aggressive decks to play with it. Like, you want to be a tempo deck, you want to be something that can like kill someone in three turns, and Suspend and Merfolk is the deck that can do that. The next deck I want to talk about is Kiki Pod, and specifically Imperial Recruiter strategies. So obviously Birthing Pod is gone, and I'm sad about it all the time. but one thing the format did print is Imperial Recruiter, which I was this is one of the reprints that I like hadn't. I didn't think they would do it. So it's 2 red for a 1/1 that when it enters the battlefield, you may search your deck for a creature with power 2 or less. If you see the promo artwork for the recruiter, the full art version, it has actually Kiki Jiki and Pestermite in the art. It's like the shadows of each of them. It's like really cool. Like that's the main combo, right? You can use recruiter to get either half of that combo. So he gets to be a redundant half of that entire deck. He's in the right colors because the Kiki Jiki is in red. But you also just have the ability to do other powerful things. We're going to talk about in a little bit when we get the strategies that don't currently exist, but the like Revelark, combo with Karmic Guy Revelark combos with a Sack Outlet. This has like plan, and those strategies might actually just work with the Kiki Jiki Pestermite combo and like a Jeskai Shell. He just allows a really good toolbox option that finds you a combo that wins you the game. The other thing is you can play him, get Kiki Jiki, cast Kiki Jiki, copying him, grabbing Pestermite, so you can even loop that up. He like lets you kind of do the Birthing Pod chain with Kiki Jiki that Kiki Jiki let you do. So I'm super hyped for the that type of strategy to come back, right? The like build up the chain to win the game through combo.
You know what card I am sort of a little surprised is not in this set, and I think will more than likely be in the next one of these, is Arena Rector, which is the Academy Rector from Battle Bond that when it dies searches for a planeswalker, because I used to play the combo with Saheeli and Feldar Sovereign Guardian in Highlander, but I would play it with Recruiter, and the whole idea there being right that Recruiter could get it would immediately get you the Guardian or it could get you the Rector, and the Rector would, so you could kind of do that whole combo together slow, and that seems totally slow enough to be modern centric. I don't think that's like an unfair thing in modern. That's like probably actually kind of bad in modern.
Yeah, I think it might be bad. But like, yeah,
I can't believe that the Arena Rector hasn't already been somehow printed into modern. It feels like one of those cards that they're just like waiting to find the opportunity to do. But yes, I would agree with you. It does feel to me like, and I actually really like that from a design perspective. I really appreciate that Wizards is doing that, that they're promoting the Kiki Jiki combo deck, because that's like really cool, right? Kiki costs 5, so yeah. Like, I'm all about that. Like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
Right. Well, and it gets the new Noble Hierarch as well, right? With, like, being able to have a Ignoble Hierarch be able to generate red mana so you can take that green mana and make it into, like, triple red pretty easily to get you to Kiki Jiki is actually a really big game for that deck. That deck always had the problem of, like, Noble Hierarch did not make red mana, which makes Kiki Jiki that much harder to cast. That 3 red mana in Kiki Jiki is a more significant deterrent of casting that card than even it being 5 mana. And so having cards like this to be able to make it more easily cast is like really important and I think really cool. The next deck I want to talk about is Crabvine, but really Vengevine decks. And the big thing here is Vengevine was, I love a Vengevine deck. Hollowed One decks were extremely, you know, hurt by the banning of Faithless Looting. And right. Now there's a few new looting cards. There's a new looting card. There's
a rebound.
You get to cast a Tice. Yeah. Rebound. There's a rebound. You discard a card, draw a card for 1 and a red, and then it rebounds on the next turn. That card's really cool for these type of strategies. But for me, one of the things that I think is really interesting is the Root Walla. So there's this Burning Root Walla. The problem with Vengevine, and the reason I was so hyped about Arclave Phoenix back in the day, was like getting good like creatures to cast that trigger a Vengevine is actually a lot of work, and often you don't have good ones. They're mostly bad. And the power of Root Walla Which is the green one, and what was played when Survival of the Fittest decks were the most powerful deck in Legacy was you could use Survival of the Fittest to discard Avengevine, then discard a Rootwalla, playing it, getting the first creature trigger, and then discard another Rootwalla, discarding it and playing it. So what, for those who don't know, Basking Rootwalla, which is the original one, is a one green that has Madness Zero creature. And then it has a, you know, a pump ability. They printed Burning Rootwalla. Let me find it so I can look at it. It's right here.
I got it right here in front of me. What's crazy, right. What's crazy about this card is that the original root, the Basking Rootwalla, it was green one to pump it. This one is only red to pump it. And it's the same card. It's a one mana one one that Madness is for zero. So that's the big difference, is that this card, now I believe the original Rootwalla was +2/+2 for two. So this is not strictly better. Yes. It's red for +2/+0. So it's a more aggressive Rootwalla. But even so, for what we're talking about with just killing your opponent, this is a better card. Like, it just is. It only costs one to make two power more. And the fact that we have this now in Modern, like, this is a pretty big push. It's pretty sweet. It's a pretty sweet push, I gotta say.
Right. This card I'm super excited by. Makes Fauna Shaman better, right? It makes, like, other cool discard outlets really cool. Anything that has discard as a cost now becomes a lot more interesting, and obviously then it triggers Vengevines. Vengevines come into play. So I think that I was, like, so hyped and really confused why people weren't as hyped as I was when it was printed, and I'm glad you're on board, Ben. The next deck I want to talk about is Cascade, and specifically there's two versions of this, right? There's As Foretold decks, and then there's Living End decks, classically. And
dude, there's like 17 cards that have been previewed so far that make this deck sweet. Like, I like don't even know where to start. I have so much to say about this deck. Go ahead.
So I think there's two categories, right? There's the suspend cards for zero, which there's a full cycle of. And then there's the fact that Shardless Agent was added to the format. Obviously Shardless Agent is extraordinarily powerful. The fact that it's like a threat and a creature that comes into play that then can suspend into these things, but then like can see play as more of a value engine. Like, there's going to be a ton of different things you can do with it. In these, though, it's just like a great blocker. If they're able to interact somehow with the card, if they are able to counter, for instance, the Force of Negation, your suspend, zero cost, whatever, your Living End, then you still have a 2/2 attacker that can get in there, which is much better than just like all your creatures get +1/+0. So that's like, that's the big like upfront option, like just fits in the decks that already exist. The fact that they've added like a Demonic Tutor and a, like, there's so many different options here. Yeah, like all of the free suspend cards. I think the green one is pretty medium. Is that the one that's medium? I forget which one is a little mediocre. No, the green one's insane.
The green one is Yogg-Will. The blue one is the blue one's Bribery. The green one is Yogg-Will. There's
the red one's Glimpse of Tomorrow, which I don't know what the card reference is, but you shuffle all permanents. It's Warp World. I think you just Warp World, but one-sided Warp
exactly
World.
Exactly right. Yeah.
There's Soul Ring. There's Soul Ring.
Soul Ring. Exactly. Yeah. And then of course the card that really comes to mind that like pushes us is Bloodbraid Marauder. This is the card that when I read I was like, okay, so we're like getting to a different zone here of Cascade free spell interaction. This is red one for a 3/1 human berserker, can't block. It has Delirium, and it has Cascade as long as there are four or more cards in your graveyard. Now, I appreciate the fact that the Delirium means to get this on turn two, you have to like do something really wild on turn one. Like, I do appreciate that. Like, it's the conditions have to be met, but the fact that you have a 2-mana 3/1 aggressive creature that if you can figure out a way within the first two turns to get this turned on, this is going to be like a 2-mana 3/1 draw 3 or like a 2-mana 3/1 Soul Ring, or like there are so many powerful things in Modern now, or Bribery, like just like all the things. it's like, mm-hmm. I read this card and I'm like, I mean, Alex, what do we have to do in a very conservative manner to achieve Delirium by turn two when you cast this?
So I think Bloodbraid Marauder is a little bit of a trap, Well, okay, it's not a trap. I think it's really good, but I think it's really good when it's just cascading accidentally, kind of how Bloodbraid Elf currently cascades in Jund. Like, I think this card is powerful in red decks where you're playing fetch lands, you're playing burn spells, you're playing sorcery burn spells at instant sorcery speed, and you're going to, like, have creatures that die because they're going to have to answer their creatures or they lose, right? Like, if you have a Goblin God in turn one, they're going to die unless they kill it, and therefore your creature, and then you play this, you have Delirium, you go off, and you just get a lightning bolt and you burn them in the face or kill their creature that's in your way. That's where I think this card is great. I think in decks that are trying to cheat out cards, I think, like, in a Living End deck, I think this is not a good card because all of your cyclers are creatures. Like, the point of the Living End deck is to cycle creatures into your graveyard that you Living End back into play. So you only really have creature and sorcery or creature and land in your graveyard, which means that this is never going to have Delirium. And then that means when you cascade, you're going to hit him. And then for the other version of that, which gets to cast all those suspend cards, which is the Azfurth Told decks. Those decks, I think, are just don't need him. Like, he doesn't do what the deck needs, right? Like, in those decks, you just want to play like one good one drops, two drops. You want to play Electro Dominance and Azfurth Told to get to cast Profane Tutor or get to cast the Warp World and cheat an Embercles into play, or, you know, get to draw three cards. Like, there's just more powerful things you could be doing. Or now you get to do, you know, Storm with Gaia's Will. Because that's what
Magic
needed.
I feel like your point is that basically, if you want to get value anymore in Modern, like if you want to be a value-oriented deck, the value has to be so outrageous that it's like almost anything that it's not outrageous when it comes to just like fair cards getting value is not good enough. Because the power level is so high now that like the combo decks will beat you, and the cards that and the decks that are taking advantage of, like, you know, they're basically playing unfair Magic will beat you. And so Jund in itself, just the good decks that play only good cards will probably beat you. So the only way for you to beat those decks and the rest of them, it has to be like your value has to be so nuts. Like to get like cascade value, you just like the whole deck, every card has to be like, I'm outdoing you. And what you're saying is that because this is the only two mana cascade card, to make sure you have anything going with this, you have to play things that cost probably one, which means that like those cards aren't that good. You'll skip the other cards that cost zero. It feels like there's not enough things that support the idea of a two mana cascade card.
Yeah. And in fact, that's just a 3/1 for 2, right? Like if it had another ability instead of not, like instead of a drawback, it can't block, right? Like if it was able to like have, if it had haste, I would love this card. If this card had haste, I'd be all in. Yeah, like it, I feel like what this deck wants to do, just like what I'm excited for is a Bloodbraid Elf and like a Rug Bloodbraid Elf Shardless Agent deck that just is playing Crash of the Footfalls and the one that draws you in non-ancestral recall, whatever, draw three cards, that suspend one, and like the Wheel of Fortune maybe. And just like is playing a cool value game that these cards are just good cards together and will be able to get you really valuable plays off of those cascades. And I don't know if he fits. And that's the best place for him, I think, outside of just like regular burn, because then he gets to like hang out with Bloodbraid Elf and the other one. And you're only casting these cards for value. So you're fine if you hit a Lightning Bolt. You're fine if you hit a Serum Visions, but you like sometimes just get the nut draw and you hit the suspend card or a Crashing Footfalls or this guy, and that's I think where he's a little bit better. But even then, I don't know if you need him. You just have like the other two are just that much stronger.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The last deck I want to talk about, and there's the one thing to say is we just have a few, and especially for time, I'm trying to go through these. There's just like infinity of these. I have stuff like Mardu Aristocrat, which is there's so much from Goblin Bombardment specifically, but like there's a bunch of token stuff. There's the new Bridge from Below Magus. Like there's a bunch of cool stuff there. There's like a ton of Hate Bears that like are hard to talk towards because I don't even know if that deck's going to look like what it does now, but just there's a bunch of just like creatures that interact with your opponent in different ways. Go. like anything that plays white just gets the white invocation, et cetera. So like, I don't want to get too deep into all of the different options here. Soul Sister's got Abiding Grace, which is the enchantment that lets you reanimate a thing. But the last one I want to talk about is Mono Black Pox. It doesn't have to be Mono Black, but Black Pox. And that is because they got Braids. They got the card Damn. They got Grief. They got Voidwalker. I mean, in some ways, this is also an extension to the next conversation, which are new decks that never existed, which I'm going to get a lot of hate when I say Mono Black Devotion is a new deck that has never existed. And both of these decks together kind of build that framework as we segue into new decks that don't exist of like, Mono Black got a lot of very powerful effects in this set.
And I think when you look at the cards you're talking about, I mean, Braids, and I could be wrong about this, but I think Braids was originally printed in, although the blue Braids was Planar Chaos. Braids was probably,
I want to say Torment.
Yeah, okay. So,
but who knows?
Yeah, so
that era.
So Braids is now officially in the set. Yeah, so basically value cards that slowly but surely like win the war of attrition against your opponent, like the things that got added. Like Damn, you talk about. I mean, Damn just in itself as a card is kind of a fascinating card. Like black, destroy target creature, and then like is just Wrath of God on the other side is crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
I sort of can't believe. But again, like how often was Damnation seeing play in Modern to this point?
I mean, like, Wrath of God was seeing play, right? Like Damnation sees like is like a kind of a sideboard card for Jund forever. I think like giving like Abzan decks like this, that Damn itself is a card to make like Abzan decks come back by itself, right? Like a Jund card on the front side that's a great removal spell, just like destroy target creature for black, that in the late game can just wipe the board is like there are people talking that this is the best board wipe ever printed. I think the fact that it's two colors makes it limiting, right? You can only play it in two colors. You can only play it in black white decks. Otherwise you should play Wrath of God. That being said, Damn by itself actually might be playable, right? Like just like straight up murder for black, I don't think really exists very easily in the format without splashing to other colors.
I mean, if you're talking about that card that has the backside of Wrath of God, it's so playable. It's so good. Right. Like it's not so good as a four of, like it's so good like
two.
Probably a main deck two of is my guess. Yeah. And maybe you'd have an extra, like a third copy in your sideboard, but like just in terms of what it represents in your opening hand versus the late game draw, it's so friggin' good.
Like
to most things.
I'm so excited to play this card in like an Esper control shell. Like actually, like thinking of the different options, Abzan losing, like the problem with Abzan is that red is just like so insanely good. Like you losing Bloodbraid Elf and Red and Six is a big ask, and Lightning Bolt is a big ask. Now, for those, you get the White Invocation, you get Lingering Souls, you get Damn, you get a slew of really powerful planeswalkers. So there is arguments for it. Mardu, Damn's insane. And that's one of the few color combos that has gotten a lot of power, right? And green's gotten a lot of power, but like kind of in weird ways. Like people are complaining about how good green is after this set because they got, and I think that's a little bit for Commander, right? Like they got a Yagamoth's Will and they got a Urborg, and those two cards apparently are sacrilege for green to have. But as far as like Mardu goes, like, and Jund goes, like Tarmogoyf is bad, not bad, but it's significantly worse. And so Bloodbraid Elf and Renin 6, which are like are really good, but you don't need those. I think there's like a really cool Mardu list that's like really powerful. Damn's great there. And then obviously Esper has always been kind of a playable deck and has been a lot more recently. And this is like a huge win for Esper. I think it's the best in Esper. I think if I was going to pick a shell, partially because you can like Snapcast or Mage it back, or you can like do other cool things with it and recasting it, I'm hyped.
I mean, also you mentioned for a second ago, but Voidwalker in any of those decks, if you want to make heavier black as your base, like Voidwalker, it was our preview card, and it's so good. It's so good. Like, this card does what it's, this card just sort of exists in this like zone that so many 2 and 3 color decks, I think, and specifically black mono black decks just want, which is like a 3-power creature for 2 mana that is evasive, that has an insanely obstructive ability to your opponents, that on top of that can create card advantage for you. It does everything. It slices, it dices, like,
yeah.
This card fits into Mox. This card fits into Jund. It fits into Abzan. It fits into Esper. In any of those decks, it's quite good. Like, I think this is one of probably the better cards printed in the set, just based purely on its CMC.
Yeah, I think, like, something that people have also talked about is, like, just, like, Jund Loros, right? Like, you just play Renin 6, Kroxa, Voidwalker, Tarmogoyf, Bob, just, like, only play 2-drops, and you can take advantage of your Voidwalker all day long. And Voidwalker and Loros is insane, because you can use the cards you steal with Voidwalker, and then Loros lets you recast it, so you get to keep kind of looping it. But yeah, just like all of these cards for mono black decks just extends out to like the Cabal Coffers. We talked about in our predictions episode, what if Cabal Coffers was printed, and like, what does a mono black Tron deck look like, especially now with Break the Ice, like being able to like not have to worry about having colorless mana. Like, there is so much Tron hate in this set, and maybe Cabal Coffers just is able to take advantage of that. And like, getting to play Gary, getting to play the Bridge from Below, Magus up from Below, like all of these cards like really take advantage of that, like maximizing your black mana devotion count, and like just that kind of continues, like, and then obviously grief is part of that. Next deck is blink decks. So this is obviously the one, like Esper blink or black white base blink or anything that uses ephemerate and invocations specifically, I think, is the thing people are most excited by. The black and the white one being the most like abusable, with the blue one being able to be taken advantage of, kind of, not really with ephemerate, but yeah, I think the black and the white one being obviously the strongest. Honestly, I think the red one is better than people are giving credit to, and I think it's actually better in the ephemerate decks than people give it credit to, because it is a creature removal spell versus the blue one where ephemerate doesn't really work because it has to be on the stack, and the green one, which is like a great card, just like it's a sideboard card against graveyard decks. But with the black and the white one, being able to ephemerate on turn 1, that's the thing people are most excited by, right? Like, that was like the first thing out of the gate. People are like, oh, wait, I can ephemerate grief on turn 1, thought seizing my opponent twice, and then it comes back and thought seizes them a third time, and I end up with a menace creature on turn 2. Like, how is that
hard
fair?
It's like hard to imagine losing in a lot of scenarios. Like, you have to be playing against basically blue-white control and or Jund, I would say, are like the decks that come to mind right off the bat that feel like they could just draw good enough cards to be able to, like, you know, like draw a path, draw like something, right? But like, if you're a combo deck, if you're even like a moderate deck, like if you're just like an elves deck or something, like, and you just get rid of the things that matter, if you're not all good cards, I feel like if you get thought seized 3 times in the first 2 turns, you don't win. If they have a big threat, you have to draw exactly answer or you just lose. That's why I think probably those blink decks, with the ones you're talking about, are the best ones, because all the rest of them, I don't care that much about pathing your creature in the first 1.5 turns. Like, I don't care. Or I should say, sorry, swordsing your creature. That doesn't matter to me. Like, you probably won't have something that I care that much about swordsing, especially 2 or 3 times. I don't care about your graveyard in the first 1 to 2 turns. I don't really particularly care about like doing a bunch of damage to your creatures and planeswalkers that much. And I definitely don't really care about, like, because blue's so reactive. So the only one that really goes crazy off ephemerate is definitely the Thoughtseize one, right? It's grief. Grief's the one that, like, if you want to go aggro turbo, you can get the most value. Most of the rest of them don't scale up quite as well in the first 2 turns.
Well, that's why I do like the white and the red one for 2 reasons. The white one, because you're doing it, because it's still good, right? Like, you still are benefited from pathing from Swords to Plowsharing, two of your opponent's creatures. And like, maybe you don't get in on that insane turn one play, because you have to have redundancy with this Ephemerate deck. Because the thing that's bad is playing a deck that's trying to grief Ephemerate and then not drawing grief and drawing two Ephemerates in your opening hand. So you need like as much redundancy as possible. And them playing a Bird of Paradise esque effect or a Hierarchist effect or a different one drop, and or obviously one of the many two drops in the format, and on turn two ephemerating them out with the white one is pretty good. The red one I really like, partially for the same reason. Like, it doesn't do that much different in Modern than the white one does. There's not that many creatures that are must kill creatures on turns one through three that you couldn't get the better cards or a free mana spell doesn't matter for, that doing that amount of damage to doesn't also kill. Not to mention the sad panda that you make when you play against the eight Noble Hierarch deck that now will exist, or the Affinity deck that exists, and you get to like kill three of your creatures with the red one. But the back end of that, which is ephemerating a 3/3 double strike into play after wiping their board twice on turn two or on turn three, is pretty massive. That's one of the things I really like about the red one. Like, doing the modern version of this list versus the blue one, everyone's really excited by the blue one. I think the blue one's bad, and I think the red one is good. I think the green one is as good as everyone knows it is. It's a 3/4 reach for three for flash, which is already a great card. It kills every 3/1 flyer that this format is playing, which ends up being more than you would expect. And then it eats graveyards for days and or protects your graveyard if that matters. And like, that card will see play in the exact way people think it does as a sideboard card.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you that I think the thing about the red one that really stands out to me is, like, of all of them, it's the one that when it's left on the battlefield is the most savage. If you're telling me that I get a 3/3 double striker on turn one by like doing anything, like what do I have to do to get a 3/3 double strike creature on turn one? We used to talk about Delver, right? That was a conditional flip on turn two to be flying, and you had no protection. It didn't cost you a card, but like, that was like, we were excited about that. If I get 6 damage on turn two, which like in reality, in the deck that I'm playing a 3/3 double striker on turn one off of an ephemerate that doesn't cost mana on turn two. Now, granted, I can't attack on turn two, but like, there's a very real world in which I win the game on turn three in that deck.
You can attack. You don't have to ephemerate on turn two.
It's optional. True.
Yeah. Say you're on the play. You turn one, ephemerate the 3/3 double striker into play. So you've now wasted three cards. That's a lot of cards to waste to do this, but you can do that.
Together, 3/3, yeah.
And they don't play a creature on their turn because they know you can ephemerate. Now you just have dealt 6 to their face.
So it costs you an ephemerate. It costs you a red card. So you have to have had a land in the first place to have even cast it. So, right, with the Fury, that's now you have 4 of your 7 cards. You're on the play. So you have 3 cards left. You're going to draw one more card. Let's say you don't ephemerate. Is there a world in which you play one more card, you draw? So now you have 3 cards left in hand, and you have a 3/3 double striker. Can you win on turn two with 3 more cards? I mean, the answer is definitely yes. It's some sort of like a plus.
So you've also,
if it's green,
you have ephemerate and a fetch land in your graveyard. Can you become immense that turn?
Probably can't become immense that fast. I don't think you have enough options because you had to exile a card.
And it's
my guess
worse.
Like a scale up type of situation would be my guess. Like scale up plus giant growth kind of a thing.
Yeah, that works. Just two +4/+4 for one mana spells. Just does it, right? Because it's now an 11/11.
Groundswell is +4/+4 for one.
Yeah, just
Vines
just
is
groundswell.
Two. So double groundswell, yeah. Something like that. I mean, it's not the most common win, but like it exists. There's a turn two win with Fury, but it costs you like all your cards, so it's not that common.
Yeah, I don't.
But I agree with you.
I don't think that's the deck to play.
Better than people realize.
Yeah, I think what you want to do is like I don't think you want to go deep on the ephemerate on like what where it's great is if they play a one drop, and then you. You then do it on your turn one, and you just get them, and you're just like, Because now you're three cards down for their one card, but you're two cards down for their one card. You have two for one yourself. They can't play a creature on their next turn, right? They're out an entire turn. And then, like, you know, obviously killing a Ren and Six, killing a Liliana of the Veil. Like, there's like other planeswalkers that you get to kill with this card. I think the red one is being really underrated, in regards to like being able to ephemerate it, being able to take advantage of it. It's just such a beater in play.
That's the real trick. So you think the blue one's the worst? What do you think is second worst?
I think green? I was on red. I think it's green. And not like, to be honest, I think all of them are decent. I think the blue one is the best body, like just like the best card to cast. A 4-mana 3/3 flash is like good.
Fine.
But like, I think people are underrating how mediocre a counterspell against creatures and planeswalkers is versus split damage amongst multiple creatures and planeswalkers.
Yeah.
I would rather play Venture still. It
is
interesting
that the red one is once again the only one that has some weird restriction of timing, right? It's kind of strange that all the rest are flash, but the red one is the only one you can play on your turn. And the red one in the old set, in the cycle from the last set was like, you could play it in the same time, but it also was the only one that didn't have any real appeal because the creatures you would play and in theory guess block with would die.
Yeah.
I remember reading it the first time and being like, this is so dumb. Like, why is this card templated like this? And it's funny that this is the only one that doesn't have flash.
I'm guessing it was a 3/3 that didn't have, and it had flash and didn't have double strike. And they realized it needed to not have flash. Something and it was too good. Strong to do this at end of turn for someone. Talking about these things, because they'll be talked about forever with the blue one. I would rather play Venser, especially now that Riptide Laboratory is in Modern.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, that's really powerful.
The fact that you can like Snapcaster Mage, Venser, Vendilion Click, Spellstutter Sprite, and that's a deck with Riptide Laboratory. Oh, and what's the white blue bounce spell? Bounce a creature?
White blue bounce a creature? The Reflector Mage.
Yes, Reflector Mage is also a wizard. Deputy is a wizard. Like, there's so many wizards, and a lot of them are just playable in a blue-white deck. Like, almost none of the cards I mentioned are like, oh, this is good with Riptide Laboratory, but it's bad everywhere else. No, all of them are just good cards that, like, you get to play a single Riptide Laboratory in your deck, and sometimes you'll just win the game because you locked your opponent out once you get to 6 mana.
I read Riptide was getting previewed, I was like, it just seems like in Modern with what's available, like not overtly powerful, because I know that what's required to make that happen is 3 extra mana to like do anything, but I still just was like, I mean, the inevitability of this, like we freaked out about, you know, Talarian Academy Ruins for years, and it was always like this really cool inevitability engine you could use in those decks. And like, this just feels like that times 10, because there are so many good established things already that you can do.
The next thing I want to talk about is green based storm. So there's like they printed a bunch of green storm cards. They printed the 1-mana, you get Squirrel storm card. They printed the hunting pack, which is you get a bunch of 4/4s for you get a 4/4 storm. They printed the storm creatures, both the dinosaur that gets cheaper for any spells you cast that turn, as well as the ooze that copies itself equal to your storm count when you cast
that. That thing is sort of bananas, because that thing suggests that basically it's a 2/2 creature for green 2. Where it states that every spell you cast before it that turn, it's like creature storm, you get an extra copy, and that copy is non-legendary. But for each ooze that came into play this turn, each ooze gets +1/+1, right? So if you cast one extra spell, you're getting 2 4/4s for 5 mana. If you cast 2 extra spells, now you're getting 15 power for 5 mana. If for whatever reason you can cast 3 spells ahead of time, you are going to end up getting 20 power for 5 mana. Like, that card scales in a crazy way. I mean, it's AV, triple green, so it's not
The name's AV Progenitor Ooze.
Yeah. It's not easy. Triple green, like, you're not going to cast tons of cantrips, but like the Metamorphose idea of this deck, it, like, there is definitely a world in which you're getting 15 to 20 power for 5 mana. It's not crazy. Like that to me feels like I'm going to scale up and go crazy. Like imagine, what if like Search for Tomorrow, that card comes in on suspend, it creates a spell and gets you an untapped land. So now you have accelerated and gotten yourself a spell combined with like a Metamorphose. Like that type of deck is a thing someone's going to do. That's just going to be like, yeah, turn 4, I get 20 power. And you're like, oh, what right. do I do? What do I do about your 20 power? Right.
Well, and so some this is a little commander aside, but a deck people are talking about also is playing AV with Food Chain. Because you just go infinite because it's in your command zone, because you make enough mana with the copies you make to be able to pay for the commander tax. So you can just cast it an infinite amount of times and then you get infinite oozes and you just win the game. That's also true with the dinosaur, who also does that. But one of the decks that people are really kind of excited about here is the kind of like the Fecundity storm token sacrifice deck, because there's now multiple very powerful between the Squirrel Storm card and Empty the Warrens that like you can pull up that like kind of cool Fecundity storm deck that like wins with Goblin Bombardment, especially now that Goblin Bombardment is in the deck, which was part of that. Like the original deck was Goblin Bombardment, Fecundity, storm cards with that make tokens, and now all of those pieces exist in the format. I think that's another kind of direction you can go. That then just has the backup plan you described, right? If you just play like Metamorphose and some Storm Cart and some just red rituals, you might just cast this ooze and win,
right?
Because your opponent can't deal with it.
I'm going so much more the like fair Magic version, where I'm just like, sure, like rituals, Search for Tomorrow, Metamorphose. You need like a few other cards that make this card bonkers, but truthfully, Empty the Warrens is probably enough. If I play 4 of this card, 4 empty, and then all of the support cards I'm talking about, it definitely feels like a counterspell or a Thoughtseize can ruin my day pretty hard. You know, if they counter my ritual, mm-hmm. or if they Thoughtseize out my ooze, but like if I go against the deck that like isn't prepared for that, I will probably win, like more than likely.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it definitely makes you think that like Is what you called Autumn's Veil? Is that legal in Modern or is that banned?
Yeah, no, it's legal.
It's legal. So I mean, if I'm playing Autumn's Veil in that deck,
no, you don't mean Autumn's Veil. You mean Veil of Summer.
That's the one I was talking about. Yeah.
All right. So we have kind of two more decks I want to talk about quickly here, and then I'll riff off a bunch of random stuff really quick, our lovely people in the editing room, Marshall and Rick, are going to have to just flash all those cards up as I say them. But the first one is Enchantress, because this is one they leaned in really heavily with new stuff. Stuff like Scythist, yeah. Harvest Hand, they added Sterling Grove, the Sanctum Weaver, which is the Sarek Sanctum on an enchantment creature. They just added a bunch of these really powerful Enchantress cards that, like, it would be surprising to me if there just wasn't an Enchantress deck that doesn't come out of this pretty quickly.
What's interesting about that is that in Modern, you don't have the luxury that we have had in casual Commander and like competitive 1v1 formats that are non-sanctioned for years of these cool, fun cards. If you're going to make Enchantress work, you basically have to have things that cost one. That's like basically the deal, right? Like you have to be able to cast multiple spells in a turn to gain critical mass to be able to thwart your opponent. And I feel like every year or two, Wizards will focus on pushing one or two more cards that do this. You think back to that uncommon card from a core set a couple years ago that was just Enchantress, uncommon, you know, in green white for 3, and like, yeah, it was pretty good, fine, but like even that, casting a 3-mana creature that's your engine that does nothing on entry is not quite good enough. It actually feels like the type of cards that you would want to push an Enchantress deck are actually exactly the kind of cards that they print in sets just like Horizons and Horizons 2. It's cards that are a little undercosted and do something when they enter. And it basically feels to me like when I started to read the 2 or 3 Enchantress cards in green white they were printing in this set, I was like, okay, like there is now support enough for this to work. I can see it. There's a green white card that makes sense. Like, I think the critical mass is here for this to become a real deck.
Yeah, I think you needed Scythus. I think you needed a 2-mana Enchantress. In fact, there are enchantment decks in Modern. They're called Boggles. I didn't say Noggles because I've grown as a Magic content creator. But you need and the reason that deck worked is because they have a 2-mana Enchantress, right? They have core whatever. And so Scythus being printed is such a big win for these types of strategies. And with Sterling Grode allowing you to both to protect your enchantments and then also play the Hate Bears versions of Enchantress, which is like the Pillar Fort version of the deck, I think is also really important. And you kind of need both halves. I think you needed both of these to really push it over the edge. You now have a ton of really, really good support from all of the stuff from Theros Beyond Death. Included, they have the really powerful 3-mana Enchantress that gets a +1/+1 counter every time an enchantment enters the battlefield. Right. And you draw a card, like it gets bigger and you draw a card. And then this set just adds a bunch of other kind of useful tools to that. But I do think those two cards specifically more than anything. I mean, you get Mirari's Wake in this set, right? Like there's a bunch of really cool green and white.
Huge printing. That's massive.
Yeah. So like you get a really, really good selection of powerful cards. And there's now enough stuff. You get Hall of Heliod exists in the format. Like there's everything you need to make Enchantress playable now. And the big thing it was missing was Scythus. I think that like, that's the reason it's legendary. Honestly, I think this is one of the few times in Wizards history recently where legendary was used as a drawback versus it being used as a nod towards Commander. This is and Upheaval and Braids, the two banned cards, are like my favorite. Like, yes, this is not all about Commander, because like Scythus being legendary is a drawback here. It's good for Commander, but it's also like a big, like in Modern, that's a real concern, right? Having two of these in play maybe were too good. So now having to only have one makes the deck a little bit more fair. Anything else on Enchantress?
No, I don't think so. No.
Cool. Next card deck I want to talk about is Reanimator. A deck that kind of like I've always wanted to exist in Modern. I have cast a fair share of Burial Rites in this in my life, but there just never was like the right pieces. And they like went really, really hard at this. Everything from Priest of the Fell Rites, which like might be my favorite card in the set. Another card that like in a different version of the Ephemerate deck that we talked about, I would be really excited to play because you can Ephemerate the Unearth effect.
Right.
To save it and use it two turns. So like that's really cool. getting the ability. They also added the Entomb effect, which I'm looking up because it's up here. Unmarked Grave. Oh, such a good name. So it's Unmarked Grave, named by Aaron Forsyth. He said this is like one of the few times in his Magic career of like 30 years where a card from beginning that he named made it all the way to print. But it's because it's a non-legendary creature. Right, you can find any non-legendary card and put it into your graveyard, so it's unmarked. It doesn't have a name. Just like great flavor win. But this like this finds everything from a loam. Like you can get a life from a loam. You can get a stinkweed imp. You can get anything in your graveyard, but including big creatures. I'm looking at Suntan specifically, and then you added Persist. One in the black, return target legendary non-legendary creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter on it. So you now have.
It's animate dead, but it's non-legendary animate dead. So you and they're honestly they're signaling to us in the set, right? Like there's a few cards. Archon of Cruelty is just like, yeah, go for it, you know, like do your thing. Like this card's really good. There are certainly cards that I think I look at with Persist that I go, yeah, I mean that makes sense.
I think honestly, Sun Titan is still the card I'm most excited by here, especially with the fact that Sun Titan now can like do silly things with Priest of the Fell Rites. And so you can kind of like loop those with each other and get and obviously Sun Titan has its normal really powerful effects. Grave Titan in a black white version of this deck seems really good. Like even just like doing it for value, like reanimating the incarnation that you sacrificed because you just paid its evoke cost. So it's in your graveyard. So you get it back. Like that's such a cool loop to me. That seems really powerful. Like just being able to like keep fearing your opponent every turn.
I mean, for sure. I mean, I do think that Archon of Cruelty is pretty damn good. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel
yeah.
like this card being printed is like a really powerful thing. But like, yeah, I mean, I just think the idea that Persist, you know, we had worked with we had worked with Goryeo's Vengeance for years to like figure out the best instant speed ways to, you know, create really cool things. And Persist feels like it adds an extra level of the same mana cost of black one to do really, really, really bonkers things without having to be so caged by the idea of legendary instant speed. Like, they're both very cool, but Persist just feels, if you want to talk about certain cards in modern, in this set, feeling like they're pushing modern to 20% beyond what it was, like, we're going to just give you tools to just make this feel less spectacular but like normally powerful. Persist is one of those cards where it's like, yeah, good for you. Now you can do this.
Well, yeah, and like Goryeo's Vengeance, like, you only get the creature really for that, you know, that like, because it's legendary and you only get it for the time being. So like it has its negative effects, where Persist like is such a more open option to get things. Like, there are way more powerful non-legendaries. You can get Ashen Rider, right? If you want to exile something, you have Inkwell. Like, the classic, like, now reanimate Inkwell Leviathan on turn two is a thing that is possible in this format. It's just like a standard normal thing that I've, you, like, games will be won. I don't, like, yes, it's like a little outclassed by like the insane things you can play, but like, there are decks that just can't beat an Inkwell Leviathan ever. Like a turn two Inkwell Leviathan, just like
we used to do that in Highlander all the time. That used to be like I used to do that constantly. Like, that's so good and so hard to interact with.
Right. And then like It That Betrays obviously is like the best Eldrazi you can do this with, being able to steal their permanence. Void Winnower, though, on the other side of Eldrazi, cuts out like all of their removal spells, just locks people out of the game. You have stuff like Sire of Insanity, just like discard their hand. Goodbye, people's hands. They no longer have it. There's a bunch of other cool reanimator targets, even like cute stuff that like Tight Tinoth Rex option, where you play the cyclers, or just like massive cycler cards, so you don't have to play like a discard package, and you're just like value persisting them out of the game, where you just have a 10/10 trampler on turn three, backed up with the removal spells. Like, there's so many cool things you can do with now having between Persist and the Priest of the Fell Rites. You now have two separate 2-mana reanimator spells that are unconditional in the format. And I feel like there's a lot to do with that. And then you add Karmic Guide, right? You add Karmic Guide on top of all of this.
Oh my God. Jeez, that card is. And the fact that it's a 2/2 and this is only -1/-1, it's like it stays in play that turn for other things to be done. You get something back. I mean, like, yeah, Karmic Guide, we haven't really talked about. Well, on the next show, I would imagine when we do the awards, Karmic Guide will probably be pretty high on the list of nominations. That card's insane.
I'm going to be talking about Karmic Guide for a very long time. For a very, very long time. Oh, I guess the last reanimator is Dermotaxi. We haven't even talked about this. Have you seen this card?
Yeah, for sure. You're talking about the artifact.
The 2-mana artifact vehicle imprint. As Dermotaxi enters the battlefield, exile a creature card from a graveyard. Tap 2 untapped creatures you control. Until end of turn, it becomes a copy of the imprinted card, and it's a vehicle until it's other types. So you can, like...
Feels like this and Lazav are probably hand in hand on some level in like modern crazy deck.
Lazav, you have to use the mana. Like Lazav, you can only get things that you spend mana on.
You're not going to get the same cheat. Like, this card allows you to cheat whatever you want, but like, my point is that if you're going to dump things into your graveyard with 2-mana spells and then try to get value off of what's in your graveyard, it seems like they probably play together, would be my guess, because like, even just like Lazav copying a Hedron Crab and like being able to mill more things.
Lazav gets you stuff in your graveyard, but the thing you want in your graveyard, like, you want Elishnorn more than anything, right? Because like, you want a card that is massive, that when it attacks, it doesn't require an ETB, right? Like, it needs to be able to do whatever is good about it while it's attacking. And you need to be wanting to play creatures so you can turn this on. So like, to me, that's Elishnorn, right? You just have Elishnorn in your graveyard and then just like play Lingering Souls with this and Elishnorn in like a self mill or like a discard deck. Lazav, to me, you want more like Lazav wants Mere Superion. You want low converted mana cost, but like weird drawbacks that Lazav puts into play accidentally. And that's, which is a totally different idea.
It wants Dreadnought, basically, but they can't reprint Dreadnought. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? All right. So that's that. Those are the two main kind of deck concepts I wanted to touch upon before we were done. There's so much in this set. We like as we're already at 2 hour or an hour and a half and we're having a little bit of audio trouble. But just like some throwaways, you have just Upheaval Existing. Like that's an insane card that is going to do cool stuff in this format. You have whatever you want to do with Glimpse of Tomorrow. You have Grists in Jund and Dacon doing cool artifact reanimator stuff that's really, really powerful. Then you get into established decks. And we didn't even get to kind of talk about this stuff. And I think we'll do an episode where we talk more about like established decks and what powerful things are. Because we didn't even talk about Ragavan, which I know is like the best card in the set for you.
favorite card in the entire set, seriously.
We didn't talk about Dragon's Rage Channeler, which is another like amazing card from my end. Like it's an amazing Phoenix card, being able to just surveil every time, like prowess surveil. We didn't talk really just about the card Counterspell. Fire and Ice is printed in this set. Another call that we got.
God, shot call. We didn't even talk about Fire and Ice. That's crazy. We got it. We got to basically, I think we just need an extra episode just to like to talk about sweet cards.
Yeah. We'll probably do the like Academy Awards and then we'll do the second half review, especially because then people get to play with the cards and we'll have a little bit more to talk about. We didn't talk about Blue-White Control or Burn getting Flame Rift or Elves getting Quirion Dryad or Jund getting in its own hierarch, its own personal hierarch that Jund got. That's crazy. Nor our favorite cards. So there's a ton more stuff to talk about. Once again, make sure to check out the link below. At worst, there's a place to put in submissions and as well as links to where you can vote for next week's Academy Award extravaganza. I believe we should be back to streaming Commander this Monday night. So tonight we'll be streaming Commander. Make sure to check that out. twitch.tv/KessWiley. If not, Commander will be streaming something, maybe more kind of content in the review world. Make sure to check out our Discord, as I said before, and if you're on TCG Player, make sure to use the code TheMMCast to check out and get some cards. It's super appreciated. Please. And thank you all of the people that donate to our Patreon. Pinkies up to you, ladies and gentlemen and friends, and we'll talk to all of you next week.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.